What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room. We are in the high 90s for episodes. High 90s. We haven't hit 100 yet. We're getting close, though.
It's funny. It always comes down to this because, I mean, we always say the road to, well, okay, so this would be 97.
Episode 97. That's right. It's motherfucking right.
So that means we need three more after this, and based on the latest hiatus, I don't know.
Look, we got to get it, man. We got to get 2018 is the year of 100.
The last one we did was August. It was mid July.
Fuck. That's a terrible track record, Scott.
I mean, we missed August and September.
Yep.
We did two in July, too.
Yeah. Within like 10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not good. It does not bode well.
It is what it is. Life gets in the way.
It does. But we got a lot coming out at the end of the year, man. December is chock full of good shit.
It is. Like 18's been a good year for film.
It has. And, you know, they've fallen into coming in bunches. And I'm not really sure why they do that, because there are enough weekends where everybody can eat instead of trying to put them all on the same weekend. But, you know, before we get too much further, I am your host, Day. This is Get Out the Room, a horror pop culture podcast. This is the homie, the guy, my main man, Scott. He's with me. It is late, so I appreciate you. What's going on, brother?
It's good. I'm actually, I'm in yawn mode a little bit, but I'm not really, I don't know that I'm tired.
Well, it's only two of us.
I could go to bed, but I'd probably still be up anyway.
Well, it's only the two of us, so you can't really yawn here because there's nobody else for me to talk to.
Yeah, that's true. Boy, can you imagine an episode where it's just dead air, where we're just both... It's a horror.
Horror sleep. good killings. Get Out the Room. You can find us on Podomatic, Stitcher Radio, iTunes. I still think the Wicked Radio Network is alive. Not really sure.
Hold on a minute. Let me actually check that.
Pull it up. You know, Listenopoly, anywhere good podcasts find.
It's actually one of my bookmarks.
That's fantastic. Everywhere except Google Podcasts, because, like I said, that shit difficult. I'm gonna get up there though. I'll make it happen. While he's looking for that, I just want to let y'all know.
Hey, yep, it's still on there.
Hey, we are still part of Wicked Radio Network. Founders, not really. We got in there
actually. To be, it's what's weird is, so I'm looking at the other horror podcasts that are on there, and Dead Men Talking. The last episode was April 1st, 2015.
Yeah, no, we're definitely the longest running horror podcast. They've switched a lot of the content leaders multiple times since we first started. Some of the guys that started, and the ladies as well, who were instrumental in kind of creating the Wicked Radio Network. You know, like you said, life comes at you kind of fast, man, and it demands that you do different things. So some folks kind of stepped away, took on different roles. So they've filled in the rosters with some different folks.
Wow. Wait, hold on. Recent episodes. Okay, so... I just wanted to see if we were one of the guys that were on the recent episodes, but that we're not. So that's good.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't, like you said, we haven't done shit since July, so can't really be recent.
Well, but you're right.
Yeah. Like if we were recent, that would be a real big issue.
That's true.
Shout out to y'all, Wicked Radio Network. We still love and appreciate y'all. Let's see where are we going to start at, man? It's been a while. You haven't seen nothing. Life has changed for you. You got a job. You travel a lot. You're doing a lot of big things.
So we'll start with the last horror movie I saw. And this is a throwback. And it's not a throwback to back in the day. It's throwback to a crappy movie I'd never seen. It was kind of a spur of the moment. I remember when I was watching it, I actually wrote you about it. And you, I think your exact words were like, why?
Yeah.
It's species two.
Yeah. If you're not going for Natasha Henstridge, like, I'm not really sure why you're watching that film.
It's kind of like, imagine a shitty version of Alien and with a lot of, with like softcore porn.
It's actually a lot closer to Splice.
Yeah. It's you're right. Weird.
You know, it's
very, it's extremely weird.
It doesn't have any of the fun and imagination of the original. It takes the character of Elle and in weird places, and I'm not really here for it. It's not one of my favorites. Michael Madsen is ridiculous. McKelty Williamson, who Bubba Gump, he's in it. He's doing whatever he can, but they're like, these are not like scenery chewing roles. You know what I mean? Like, no one's coming in here to chew the scenery.
Oh, no. It's bare bones bullshit. I mean, Michael Madsen walks around trying to be the badass of the film, but I mean, like, you know, it doesn't really work out too well.
No, it doesn't. It looks crazy. It sounds crazy. It doesn't work.
I mean, it has some, I mean, there's some wild shit in here, though. I mean, this alien's impregnating women, and they give birth within like minutes after.
Yes.
And I was telling you before, there's this scene where the guy, there's like a male alien now, and he sits on the porch, puts a shotgun barrel in his mouth, blows his head off, and then the shit grows back, and he just gets up and walks into the house.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's wild ass shit like that. And at the end, he becomes this giant alien thing, and his head splits into two, and he has what I guess is an alien penis that comes out of his neck, and it fucks the girl alien. It's really bizarre. And I mean, I don't know what they were smoking when they made that thing, but that's a wild flick.
Yeah.
And I think there's two more.
There are.
You said it. There are, like, you've seen it.
No, I know that they exist. I refused after number two. I politely excused myself.
Now, here's the question. Do you think Natasha's in three or four?
I would hope not.
Oh, here we go. Natasha Henstridge, who is contracted to a trilogy commencing with the first Species film, briefly reprises the role of Eve in the opening scene.
There you go. So she did her contractual agreement, and then
it premiered on Sci-Fi.
Oh, okay.
So I guess the new Species girl. Let's see, because it's got to be another blonde girl, right?
Yeah,
it has to be. Yeah, Amelia Cook.
Okay,
I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, it's weird that a science fiction horror movie basically became about how hot the blonde was. Yeah, I think that's shitty. Because I think the original had some really good ideas, and you know, I actually liked the original Species. I thought it was a fun movie.
The first Species. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not great, but it's also not terrible either.
Yeah. But I hate that it's become this. It's like, well, who's that girl? Yeah, I think that's pretty shitty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it became, I mean, this sci-fi horror of this, like, I think Lake Placid went to sci-fi and Anaconda went to sci-fi. It's that type of horror movie.
No, you're right. I agree.
So, yeah, I would steer clear of Species 2. So the question becomes, why the hell did you watch it? And I was like, I don't really have a reason. No, I'll just say,
Who needs a reason to watch bad horror movies, man?
Yeah, touche. It was it brings back when I used to go to the video rental store Blockbuster and rent a movie based on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I remember the last movie my brother and I did this to. It was to one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. It was called Undead, or maybe like The Undead. I think it was just called Undead. So the cover of it was this girl. It's this girl wearing a gas mask, like in a in like a dystopian fire on the standing on this porch of this like rundown house, and she's holding a triple shotgun. So it's three shotguns that are connected together, so that when she cocks one, they all three cock, and she could fire them all at the same time.
That sounds aggressive as fuck.
Well, so we saw this and we're like, I mean, we got to watch this shit. And then we did. And, I mean, it's bad. I mean, there's the badass of the movie is this guy dressed in overalls who he was fishing and this meteorite hit the water and these zombie fish start jumping into his boat. And it's just, boy, you want some bad horror. And I remember the guy at the desk said, you guys will like this one.
Zombie fish.
Yeah.
Too far.
It's, too far. I mean, it's not great.
Clearly.
Too far. So what have you seen recently?
So I went and saw the Thaisa Farmiga and Gabriel Byrne led The Nun. I saw it in theaters. I caught that matinee though. Which is really important. You know, you should definitely see this on the matinee. You should not pay full price. It felt like a movie that was constantly building towards something, and then it simply just doesn't get there.
Okay.
Plain and simple. I really like. Oh, I said Gabriel Byrne. I meant Damien Bashir. I'm sorry. I've been drinking. Damien Bashir, really, really good actor. He is the male protagonist in this, and Thaisa Farmiga is the female protagonist. So the biggest piece with this film is that you feel like, hey, there are legitimate scary moments in this film. Not fake scary, not like unearned. There are some scary moments. But then the shit just simply doesn't build towards anything. It just kind of ends. It just peters out. It just takes all this momentum that it gains, you know, because you think that it's building towards, you know, something gigantic. But what it's actually doing is all of those scares, that's it.
Huh.
It's you know, it's cool enough. I wouldn't recommend it. You know, I can see how it got lost in the shuffle, what's currently out. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a low-budget film that made back probably double what the budget was, if not more.
Here, I'll give you the stats. Hold on.
Yeah.
Budget 22. Box office 347.
347?
Yes.
Oh, see? There you go. That's a wow. 347. Holy shit.
That should be. Juan discussed a possibility for a Nun sequel and what its storyline may cover.
Dude, so here's the thing. There's not a lot of story here. Like, you're constantly wondering how the nun became the nun. None of that shit gets talked about.
Huh.
Maybe you can at least flesh out the story a little bit. Because what I saw this time, no bueno, kid. No bueno.
I think, didn't they just announce a Conjuring 3? I think they yep, they did. Yep. Film scheduled for September 11th, 2020.
I mean, they have an entire room full of artifacts that they can create films off of. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me at all.
And I think they also have an Annabelle film in next year.
Hey, Annabelle, look, that Annabelle creation, good.
And so, the Crooked Man.
The Crooked Man. Yes. So the Crooked Man from The Conjuring 2, who is in the merry-go-round in Enfield, is back. He's getting his own shine, similar to the way the Nun did.
Now, apparently, they also, did you know they also had, there's five short films as well in the Conjuring world?
I did not know that.
Wow.
I'm excited to see some of them now that you've said that.
The Nurse, The Confession, What's Wrong with Mom, Blund's Lullaby, and Innocent Souls.
I'm going to check some of these, man.
The Nurse, let's see, The Nurse, revolves around a bandaged and temporary blind girl named Emily who attempts to elude a demon nurse. The confession. What's wrong with mom? I mean, it's... I don't think any of these tie directly into. They're all set in the Conjuring universe, but they're all their own thing.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Makes sense.
Interesting.
Yeah. But if we're gonna give it slashes, it's either 5 or 6 out of 10. Not great.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty. That's a lot better than I thought you'd get. Give it
5. I mean, I'm telling you, there are legit scary moments in it, and that's why it. So, if it's a 5 out of 5, or 5.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm the one who usually argues that 5 isn't as bad as all that. So, okay.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily believe that that's true. I think 5 is not particularly good. So.
No. That's what I mean. 5's just kind of like meh.
Yeah, and this is definitely a very meh film.
Okay.
But what I did see that was pretty good, it's a film called Summer of 84.
Oh, man, I do want to see this.
So this is another coming of age in the 80s story about a serial killer in a neighborhood. Okay?
Yeah.
And I think I might have tweeted this out or I sent this to you that it's unfair for any film because regardless of what it is, if there is an 80s style film with a coming of age group of young boys, I'm going to compare all of that shit to Stranger Things and the camaraderie between the kids there. Completely understand that it's a show versus a movie. Get it. Understand it. I know. But I always will compare them to that. Dustin, Lucas, Will, those are my guys. Here's the thing. This doesn't have necessarily that. You wouldn't believe that this particular group of kids was that tight. But what it does have is really, really great writing. From about the middle of the film on, It does some really nice stuff, man. I like this film a lot by the end of it. So I would say check that out. This is probably 7.5 for me.
I do want to see that. The guys that made it made Turbo Kid, and I love that movie.
Yeah.
This is their second film. So.
And I talked to you about this, that this is not at all Turbo film, Turbo Kid. The heart that's involved, which is a really probably about 33% of Turbo Kids, the heart.
Yes.
None of that shit is on display here. I shouldn't say none, some of it, but it's just in a very different way.
Okay.
But yeah, I liked it. So I was like, go ahead and check that out if you can.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything else you saw? You don't see anything?
I did. I remember that I actually finally watched the Chainsaw prequel Leatherface.
And how was that?
I went in with very low expectations. Chainsaw 3D is awful.
Yes.
This one I had heard, it didn't really get good reviews, and I think it was only in the theater. No, actually, I don't even think it went to the theater, to be honest with you. Let me see about some stats. So they pitched the film's almost kind of like it's Leatherface, and at the beginning of the movie, the cops, he's brought up as this bloodthirsty killer by his family, except he's kind of an innocent boy who doesn't really want to go down that path. And his family kills somebody at the beginning of the movie, and when the cops come, they take the kid away from them. It's like this vindictive cop. He's played by Stephen Dorff. And he takes him away from the mom, played by Lily Taylor, who's been in a bunch of shit.
She is. She's a great character actress.
Yeah, I'm like Dorff and Taylor are actually really good in the movie, too. Okay. and they take the kid away, and then the film picks up, you know, when he's like a young 20-year-old, and except you don't know which of the four main characters at this asylum is Leatherface. They say their name, all four of their names are different than what this guy, I don't remember what his name was, but all four of their names are different. So they all escape from this asylum during a, you know, some sort of hoopla that forms there, and they kidnap a nurse that was there with them. And as the movie progresses, you know, each one of these kids has their own fucking mental problems and whatnot. And it eventually leads to learning who Leatherface is. And it's pretty easy to guess what it is. I mean, they try to frame it as a whodunit. It's kind of an obvious, okay, well, that makes sense. And the violence is on full display. The guys that made the one saving grace is it actually was filmed pretty well too. The guys that made Inside made it. Inside was one of those, I think it was one of those French extreme films. Let me make sure I'm not just talking.
You are. It is a French film where the lady shows up at the pregnant woman's house and basically tries to cut the baby out of her stomach for the entire fucking film.
So I remember when it was coming out that, because, you know, for chainsaw fans, myself included, you hear that, you go, wow, okay, would I actually...
Don't go nowhere, I'll start with you.
Well, I heard that and thought, oh, that's an interesting, it's interesting that A, these directors would want to come into this universe and make something, especially a prequel. I find Leatherface pretty interesting. I think the general public is kind of sick of the chainsaw franchise.
Well, I also think people feel like Leatherface is very one note. So it's very difficult to convince them that there's more to it than what they've seen so far.
That's true. That's a very, very good point. And I would say that if I was given a slash to this movie, because I at the end I liked it maybe a little more than meh, so I might go a six.
That's more than what I thought it was going to get, to be honest.
Well, I enjoyed it more than I thought. My expectations were super low, and I enjoyed it more than what I thought I would. So if you're a chainsaw guy and you want to, you know, see a new chainsaw movie that's not completely terrible, this one's hell. I mean, it's better than the last one, that's for sure. Although that's not really hard to do. Although the last one did have
the Dario one,
yeah,
the one with Trey Songz in it, I believe.
Yeah. With Trey Songz, I believe he saved the entire film.
The thespian known as Trey Songz.
Oh my gosh! In fact, hold on. I think let me make sure that I thought that there was a movie I was looking into the other day, and it made like a laughably bad amount at the box office. I think it was this movie. Okay, so this movie, they don't have the budget on here, but it made $956,000 at the box office.
That's no money, dog.
Yep.
No money.
So I think it looks like the franchise rights are up in the air again for the franchise. So to be determined.
You make less than $1 million. Shit gonna be up for, you know, some conversations.
Yeah. So, and one of the they do reveal how he like why he wears a mask at first too.
Okay.
And, you know, like in the remake, I think it's because he has a disease, so he wears the mask to try and cover that up. In this one, there's like a brutal scene. It kind of happens suddenly. You remember in what was that? The Hereditary, when that shocking scene happens, like kind of in the middle of the movie, and you don't expect it, and you're like, holy shit, that's kind of what happens here. It's one of the one of the scenes that just kind of makes you jump back a little bit, like, whoa. I mean, the kid and the nurse are driving a car away, and this is when this guy's starting to really show his true colors, and the cop's chasing him and shoots through the back windshield and shoots like half of his face off. Like blows his cheek off from the back forward, and it's just like, oh my god,
that sounds like horror.
Yeah. So like I said, it's not a complete dud, but you know,
motherfuckers getting a cheek shot off, that's pretty big, man.
I mean, you know, for Leatherface, I guess it's pretty big.
Right.
So what else have you seen?
So I made the mistake.
Oh boy, that's not a good start.
No, it's not. So I watched this shit called The Terrifier on Netflix. If anybody tells you this film is good, they are a goddamn lie. They are lying to you, and you should smack them. It's not a good film.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, because I think when you first mentioned this, my comment was, that the one with the clown?
Yeah, exactly, that one. So the funny thing is, the design of the clown itself is actually quite good and very scary.
Oh, it looks scary as hell.
I've seen a lot of folks, particularly this year's New York Comic Con, at Javits, wearing the makeup and costume of the clown. So, you know, for what it's worth, that's a really good design. But no bueno. No bueno. No bueno.
So, I mean, outside of no bueno, what I mean, since it's this, you're not saying a lot of it. What's the...
There's not a whole lot to really say. Like, it's a really self-contained story. One night, drunk folks, you know, this dude, he's just a killer. And you don't get any reason why, no thing. It's just this motherfucker out here to kill. These people cross his path, he finna kill. That's the whole thing. That's it.
Damn.
He gonna do whatever he can to kill you.
So what's the what's the slashes?
3.5.
Oof. Yikes.
Yeah, I did enjoy it, man. I didn't.
Okay, so pass that one.
I would pass. If you have the opportunity to, don't see it.
Yeah. If you're going to watch it, just turn it off.
Seriously. Go sleep on it. Watch some porn. Like, do anything other than watch this film.
Okay. All right.
This is not the one where you, like, waste your me time on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
it's late at night. You got a couple different options. I can go drinking. I can, you know, go lift some kettlebells in the basement. I could fire up the Xbox, or I could watch The Terrifier. Pick any of the other options. It is a much better usage of your time.
Okay.
Here's the thing. And, you know, I like to be – a lot of shit is tongue-in-cheek, because particularly, especially if you have an indie horror film like this, shit's not always going to be great. Folks run out of money. Sometimes they don't have the ability to get access to top-notch editors. Any number of different things. I appreciate anybody who's willing to add things to the culture. If you're willing to add a film to the culture, you know, shout out to you. Huge props. You got your vision made, and that shit is on a platform as large as Netflix. So fuck the slashes I gave it. Realistically, you made that shit happen. You should be proud as fuck. I did enjoy it. Yep, I did in the same breath. I'm sorry.
Well, look, you can't win them all.
Yeah, no, we lost this motherfucker. It's a wrap.
So have you seen anything better than that?
I did. So I saw the Nicolas Cage and Andrea Riseborough Mandy, which is trippy as fuck, man. Colors are crazy. Like, you have this idea of some weird kind of bumpkin-y folks. Cage and Riceboro, and all of a sudden they introduce some supernatural shit, and you're like, wait a minute, hold on, how did we get here? And it basically builds upon itself from there. Like, once it starts to get weird, it just keeps going.
And
you got Cage going Cage. Yeah.
This was also caught my eye too. So,
I mean, a lot of people have been talking about it. The score is really good. It's moody, but it's well done. And the other aspect of all this is, Cage is in it. So you know what he's going to do. And you know what he's going to give you.
You know? Hey, actually, it seems like he's the highlight, too. Like, it's not even a crazy, campy Cage.
No. He's not. He's actually acting in the short. He's probably acting more here than Mom and Dad. Like, you know, for Mom and Dad, the film we talked about last year was Selma Blair, which is the reverse Cooties, where the parents are trying to kill everyone, not the kids. He and Selma Blair have fun. I think for this, he and Andrea Riseborough said, look, let's go to a really weird place and see what comes back. And I think that's what he did. I think Cage is at the point now where he's experimenting with his ability to be weird in real time and figuring out what works. Like, it doesn't necessarily always have to be that full crazy eyes, yelling, you know, shit from Face Off or Con Air, any of that type of shit. More so just like, let me use my face, you know, and by the end of it, he's just body and you're just seeing a lot happening. So I think it's a good film. Definitely one I would recommend.
Okay.
Yeah. Take it for what you will.
I'll take your word for it. Actually, yeah, that's one I really want to catch. So,
yeah. All right. Let's see what else. You know, I guess we've kind of gone through what we have seen. Let's really quickly run through what's coming up.
I mean, if you look at the list coming up, I know this weekend, I think I sent you the trailer for a movie called Apostle.
Yeah.
Which is another, it's going right to Netflix. It's from, it's from the dude that made the Raid movies. And he made that crazy segment we loved in VHS 2.
Yeah.
It's a period piece. Let me get the synopsis up. The year is 1905. Thomas Richardson travels to a remote island to rescue his sister after she's kidnapped by a mysterious religious cult demanding a ransom for her safe return. Soon becomes clear that the cult will rue the day it baited this man as he digs deeper and deeper into the secrets and lies upon which the commune is built.
Yeah, shit sounds good.
And the trailer's kind of wild too, and it's getting a Netflix premiere this weekend, so it'll drop on Friday. That looks pretty good.
All right. There's a film also coming out called Assassination Nation that looks absolutely insane.
Assassination Nation.
Yeah, Assassination Nation, basically a story of some girls who, their clique, they're a group, they roll together. In this town, basically, and I do mean a town, like everyone in town just gets hacked. All their deepest, darkest secrets just get put out on Facebook and the web, and no one can figure out how. So it basically pushes the townsfolk to action, and they just start grabbing arms and going off. That's it. This was one of the trailers before The Nun. So when I saw it, I'm like, yeah, I'm here for that. I think it's out now or will be out by the time this comes out. So here for that Assassination Nation.
Huh. Did we ever talk? I don't think we talked about Slice. I think that recently came out. I think it's been out for a little while on VOD.
Did Chance the Rapper?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either. I was going to try and check it out soon.
That one's got a cool, I guess the premise is kind of wild too. It's, I think it's like a pizza place that's built on a portal to hell, but during the movie, I think they encounter a werewolf as well. And it's just like, it looks kind of wild, but it's also not just Chance the Rapper, but, Zazie Beetz is in it as well.
Yeah.
And, Paul Scheer's in it. So it's, you know, it's got a comedy aspect, but it actually looks, the trailer looks really cool.
I mean, in my mind, that's probably going to be Zombieland level of funny because you just have some really talented
folks. Hey, speaking of that, man, Zombieland 2, man. Fucking A. Hell yeah.
Everyone's
it. I can't believe that they're doing that. That has got to be one of my more anticipated movies, period, horror or not, that is coming out here soon.
Man, that's scary, dude.
I think we did an episode long ago where we talked Shaun of the Dead versus Zombieland.
Yep.
I think I was the only one that was on board for Zombieland over Shaun.
No. I was the only one on Shaun of the Dead side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm very firmly a Shaun of the Dead type zombie story. Yeah. So that I very much landed down on that side of the argument.
I honestly can't believe they're getting the entire cast back either. I mean, that just seems kind of...
So I think, I mean, and this is just what I've come to recognize. I think Emma Stone is at the point now where she has as much money as she's ever going to need. And she's just living a life on things that interest her and, you know, being on set with people that she actually enjoys.
Yeah.
Which I think is really fucking admirable, man. She's young and she's still acting, doing shit that she wants to do. So I'm actually excited for Zombieland 2. So I'm here for that. Next up, and this was good news. The recent string of Cloverfield films have been mind-numbingly frustrating. So Cloverfield Lane, which was a film that was completely finished and in the can called The Cellar, caught the attention of J.J. Abrams and the Cloverfield group, so they decided to Cloverfield the ending. So I think they reshot the last 20, 25 minutes to make the story Cloverfield-ish. So during the time when that came out, we found out about a new film called Overlord. And the newest trailers have dropped. But
it looks good.
It looks really good.
Yeah, it does.
I think the latest bit of news was that it wasn't going to be part of the Cloverfield universe.
Well, they announced that it was, then now they're saying it's not, although you were saying you think it still might be as a pro.
I definitely think it may still be there in some way, shape, or form.
I mean, with the setting it is, I mean, it's like a pair of, I think it's like American paratroopers get caught behind enemy lines during D-Day.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Yep.
And they come across these Nazi experiments. But, you know, the intriguing thing in this movie is I like that a bigger production company's given them a shot. I hope it's not connected to the Cloverfield universe. But if it is, again, I've said this in the past. If that's what it takes to get some of these movies out there, then I'm not worried about an additional scene that they throw on at the end. If they really just, you know, because Cloverfield is still an interesting idea. I think there's a lot of really great ideas there. It's weird they have to get these mini films to do that, but this one has some great trailers, and they actually have a pretty interesting cast they put together for it too. So I think it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I just think it's difficult when you have some really good ideas that just don't quite come together, like the God Particle. And basically being, the paradox, the Cloverfield paradox.
Yep.
You know, they're basically creating a really nice way to explain everything that we've seen and experienced so far in the Cloverfield universe and will experience moving forward. I thought that was a great idea. I would just like to find a way for them to either make a film from scratch instead of finding 4 to 5 million to give to a film that's already finished to try and Cloverfield up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let me know if I'm wrong.
No. I agree. I absolutely agree. In fact, I'm reading here right now that I guess Abrams still has an intention to do a direct sequel to the original movie.
I am worried about that. I'm not going to lie to you, but, you know, I'd love to see what becomes of that. How is that possible? What does that mean?
Well, for a long time, remember, they were, I think the initial, after Cloverfield was on, Cloverfield was one of the early movies that kind of pushed the internet, like the internet way of promoting the film with a website. And, you know, the fan speculation online was really rampant before the movie came out. It was kind of like,
akin to Lost.
Well, or I was going to, you know, I was going to say it was akin to Snakes on a Plane. In that there was a lot.
I can understand that.
I mean, the hype for it was high, and the way they were marketing it was a lot different than what you would expect for a movie like this. And there was a rumor after it came out that they were going to release a movie that I guess there's. Do you remember when they're on the bridge when the creature starts climbing out of the water? And
yeah, when dude's brother gets killed.
Yeah, well, I guess there's a scene where the cameraman looks over across the bridge and there's another cameraman looking right at him. And they were going to do a film based on that guy's experience from the same perspective, like from his perspective, same event,
same night, opening night as it hits New York.
Correct.
Yeah. I think I would be okay with that.
I would too, but I mean, you'd have to throw TJ Miller into the mix.
You can't though.
Yeah. Well, he was the one holding the camera
during the first one. So,
yeah,
you know, outside of the handoff from TJ Miller's pan, oh, well, who the fuck is that? I wonder what's going on in his life to the, whoosh, and now we get the new guy.
Yeah. But it would, I mean, the only, you'd have to have that one scene that mimics the first movie. But other than that, it'd just be something completely different. I mean, yeah. you could even introduce new creatures that maybe the other group didn't see.
Right.
Because remember, I mean, there was that scene where they found the little creatures that were like jumping off of the big one.
Yeah, they're falling off like scales.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty interesting idea.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different interesting ideas that can go along with Cloverfield. And I'm okay with that. You know, I think we all know and kind of have an idea that we don't trust J.J. Abrams to finish anything. But these films...
Lindelof.
Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, yeah.
Hey, although, hey, they nailed the ending of Leftovers, though. If you haven't watched that, watch
they
that.
They did. You're absolutely right. Yeah, I'm all over the place tonight. Y'all got to excuse a brother. Blame it on Tito, Uncle Tito.
Hey, the big release though next week, the one everybody's been the marketing, and really, I got to imagine that a lot of horror fans are super pumped for. I think I could speak for you as well. We are as well. Is of course this new Halloween movie.
Yeah, everything I keep hearing says this is not a good horror film. This is just a really great film.
That's what, and it looks good too. I like the marketing. I like the mix of the old theme into the new way they're doing trailers nowadays. It works really, really well. And they're giving Jamie Lee Curtis the spotlight starring role. And I love that. I love that.
You can't tell this story without Laurie Stroud. And I'm glad they're willing to take the chance to do it.
Agreed. Absolutely agree. And the movie looks terrifying. I mean, there's a scene in the trailer where Mike Myers drops someone's teeth over the top of a stall door.
Yeah.
And I mean, okay, I'm here for that. Let's do this.
Yeah, that's terrifying. So,
yes.
You know, if you can conjure up different scenes like that we haven't already seen, I think we are in for a fucking treat, man. I'm excited about this one. I saw it in front of the Nun. I saw a trailer for it in front of the Nun, and I was like, you know, before I was maybe on the fence. After I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, hell yeah. It's exactly where I need to be.
Right. And it's, it looks good, man. I think the original Halloween's a good movie. I'm not the hugest fan of it, but I do really like it. And this one, I mean, I'm glad they're doing a direct sequel. I mean, I think one thing these companies have learned is, you know, to these franchises that mean a lot to the fans, it bodes well to maybe continue as opposed to reboot. And I think that's what's kind of important for this. I mean, they did it with Star Wars and Jurassic Park, and, you know, why reboot it when you can just keep a sequel going and essentially reboot it that way?
Yeah. Well, yes, I agree.
So I like that they're doing that with Halloween. So.
Yeah, I like it a lot. You know, I still see that they're trying to create a Malcolm McDowell type character, and I don't know if that's going to happen. But what I do know is what I've seen so far looks really good.
Yes, I agree. I mean, there comes a point where retreading can get a little cumbersome, and, you know, if you look back now, when Force Awakens came out, a lot of people were saying it was very similar to the first movie, but it worked because they introduced new characters with the old characters that were likable.
Yeah, but they hit the familiar themes.
Correct. And it's okay to hit the familiar themes. I think the point being, you hit the familiar themes, but don't copy the movie completely.
Absolutely.
I think that if they can manage that with this Halloween, I think it's tracking to be a giant hit too.
Yeah, I think it is. I think there's pre-sale involved, and I think they're going to do well.
I do too. I do too.
Speaking of pre-sale and doing well, we can go right into this weekend's opening monster double entendre, Venom, the Tom Hardy led Sony outing, where Tom Hardy signed a contract that said he is available for the second and third installment of the film if and only if the original one, this one, is a bona fide hit. Well, brother, guess you're going to be wearing that CGI for another 2 or 3 films.
Yep.
Because the opening weekend box office take was, what, 83 mil?
Let's see. It's currently right now, the budget was between 100 and 116, and its current total is 205.
Wow. Wow. That's a legit take home, man.
Yeah, it did. Let's see. It says production budget 100 to 116 will need to gross around 450 to break even.
Wow. Wow.
Well, you got to think, man, they marketed the shit out of that movie.
They definitely did. Well, I mean, if that is the equalizing and leveling number, then maybe Tom's not going to do it, because they're halfway there now. But that's still a lot.
Right. I mean, I got to say, I talked to a friend of mine who saw this. He saw it, and he did not care for it at all. And I've heard that from more than just him now, a few days later. And we had our concerns talking about it on this show, since it, you know, it apparently doesn't involve Spider-Man, which is a big problem. And you could see from the trailers now and the promotional material that, you know, the Venom they're using and they're focusing on is, I think it looks okay. I actually think Venom looks pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not Venom with that. Is it Venom without Spider-Man? Is it Venom without that white symbol on his chest? Dude, I mean, that's Venom.
You can't have Venom without Spider-Man the same way you can't have Spider-Man without a radioactive spider biting him.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
But that's just what it is. So the fact that they're even trying to do this is really disappointing. And, you know, when people reference Catwoman level bad, bro, we in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, man, that sucks. I hope it's not that bad. I'm gonna catch it at some point. I hope it's better than that, but I don't have high hopes. I gotta say, I mean, if we're gonna be talking about good Spider-Man movies, that new Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, now that looks really good.
That looks like everything you want from a Spider-Man film.
Not to mention, you're also getting, you know, numerous characters. So you're essentially getting a team movie.
Yeah. You're getting what? Spider-Ham.
Yeah. Spider-Gwen.
Whom is Spider-Man a very cool character in the comic books.
Yeah, she's got a great look. She's got a great design. It's an interesting concept that sounds dumb. I've told you this before. The Spider-Verse, it's a dumb idea, but Marvel's gotten it to work really well in the comics, and it looks like it's going to work really well in this movie. It's a very comic booky idea, and from what I'm seeing, it looks like it's essentially a comic book come to life. That's kind of what the trailers look like, and it looks really good. And I think they made a wise choice focusing on Miles Morales too.
Miles being at the center of the Spider-Verse is the best way to keep it fresh.
I agree.
His look is good, particularly because a lot of his newer stories have already had the Spider-Verse in them.
Right.
He had his Spider-Gwen crossover that was quite good. And I think other folks should probably learn from it and figure out how to integrate some of these characters. Because what I'm seeing looks really good. Jake Johnson as an aging Peter Parker. Taking Miles as his apprentice.
It's a good way to frame a new movie by not beating a dead horse.
Exactly.
I think that, and we've talked about this too, I think that characters like Batman, Spider-Man, Superman are ingrained in our culture enough that we don't need to be explaining their origin every time they're on the screen. And this movie is using that really, really well. They're utilizing that idea that we know who Peter Parker is. We know what happened to him. We have never seen him kind of this late in his career before as, a giant movie. And this one is giving that opportunity to maybe impart the knowledge he had when he was that age to a new character and one of the better characters that Marvel's created in recent memory, if not the best one. And
I think so.
And I mean, it's a fresh take on an old idea that it looks like they're going to hit that. They're going to hit the ball out of the park with that one.
Every single thing I see about this film, A, makes me believe Sony got it right. B, this shit's going to be incredibly enjoyable. And C, it gives them the ability to go in a different way with the characters that they haven't been able to figure out live action.
Yes.
So to that end, it's pretty refreshing.
Absolutely. And, let's say this does really well. I mean, there's a very realistic possibility that Miles could pop up in an MCU film.
It would take a little while, but sure.
Well, but if the next movie's going where I think it could go, I think that might not be as hard as it could. You know what I mean?
That's a really good point. Particularly because Spider-Man's supposed to be nowhere close to here. Who's Spider-Man? What is Spider-Man doing? Who's helping save New York City?
Right. Well, and we say all this to say to really lead into an interesting talk. I pitched an idea to Damon about an idea that I would do if I was Warner Brothers. And Sony is doing this with the Spider-Verse movie. They're utilizing a concept that, if done right, and if they do this, they essentially have beaten DC to they've beaten them home here. And that's not good for DC. This is an opportunity for DC to jump ahead, maybe not ahead, just maybe catch up to Marvel in a quick way. I'm going to frame it around an idea. There's a story that DC did, it was a few years ago. It was called Multiversity. And the idea is that this is when they kind of relaunched, I think it's post 52. They relaunched their universe again. The multiverse is still exists, but it's very small in comparison to what it used to be. There used to be an infinite number of universes. Now there's only like 100 or something, but each one is framed from a different universe that we've read about in the comics. So there's one based on Dark Knight Returns, and there's one based on The Watchmen, and there's one based on, you know, Elseworlds, where Batman was a vampire, and there's one based on Superman Red Son, and there's one based on Kingdom Come, and they're based on all of DC's best stories that existed in their own universe. And now this multiversity is a tale of kind of the best characters, not the best characters, a random group of characters from the multiverse come together to save the multiverse from a catastrophic event. So what DC needs to catch up to Marvel, what better way to do that than to take that idea of taking a group of characters from a multiverse event and having them maybe travel to different worlds that perhaps we've seen, not from a comic book, but how about from the movies we've seen and the TV shows we've seen? Warner Brothers has a unique thing here. Marvel doesn't own Spider-Man, X-Men, and the Fantastic Four outright. Now, they will soon, of course.
Yeah, when the merger happens.
Warner Brothers owns all of these items. They have them all. How cool would it be if they framed a movie around the idea that, hey, why don't we bring back Michael Keaton's Batman? What happens to him in the future? We've got this old grizzled Batman in a really gothic version of Gotham City. Let's bring him back. You know what? Why stop there? You could go any different direction with this.
And this direction is where I think the biggest piece for what we were going to was we were talking about the idea of having, it's the Batman Inc. Batman.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have someone who's physically a superhero. The idea of having a used to be superhero is probably a lot closer to the reality of the look that we're looking for here.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Scott, just say, I won't steal your thunder. Great idea.
This is kind of what started it. Fans know, if you ask any Batman fan who their favorite Batman is, a lot of them would say Kevin Conroy. Now, he's the voice of Batman from the Batman the Animated Series, but not just that. He's been voicing Batman for,
20 years,
and he does them in the video games and in the cartoons and the cartoon movies. I mean, he's been everywhere. How great would it be to see him as this Batman character, live action? Doesn't matter what he looks like. Doesn't matter. It's you need to hear the voice and see live action as the character, even if it's just a cameo. I don't care if he's just got a small, like Nick Fury like part. You give him that role, and then you start bringing in. And again, you could reach to any era of Warner Brothers DC films. You could take you could take any of the CW characters. You could take Arrow, and you could pluck him out and put, because again, you're essentially just taking them out of their current continuity, putting them into this story, and then putting them back into their current continuity. That's what the comic books do. Why not do it with these characters?
I mean, you also got a Double Flash and, you know, things like that, which could make some very interesting storytelling. if you try to get all these folks together, you know, the idea of having multiple Flashes. Edwin's great as Flash.
Yes.
The kid who plays the Flash on the CW Flash is also really good.
Yes, he is.
The casting for that show is good. The stories that they tell are interesting. And I would love to see them explore that in a live action film. Because right now the stories that they've stuck to, they're holding themselves back. They're spending, you know,
It's almost like DC is allowing the CW only to use certain characters to save bigger ones for other things. And you get that from a lot of these CW shows, like the, you know, Supergirl, I think, got to use Superman for a season, and she gets to use Martian Manhunter, which, and he actually looks great on there.
The Martian Manhunter that's on that show makes a ton of sense. He's been there since the first season. It's good. The way they utilize Supergirl makes a ton of sense. She is perfect for the big screen.
Oh, absolutely. See, now I would actually go, if I was picking a group of characters, I think I would go two different Flashes. I'd take the CW Flash. I'd take Ezra Miller. I would take two different Batman characters. I would use Michael Keaton, like an older, maybe Dark Knight Returns inspired version of Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
From his, like, from the, like post Batman Returns, obviously, but just that type of Batman character and another Batman. I'm willing, you know, maybe if you could get Christian Bale, although I doubt you could get him, but if you could get Christian Bale to play Batman again, that would be cool.
Right, or you not, get, not Val Kilmer.
Well, Val Kilmer wasn't even a terrible Batman. I mean, he wasn't a great one, but he wasn't a bad one either. I mean, you wouldn't get, let's put it this way, you're not getting George Clooney for that shit. So, but, you know, pick up another Batman of some sort. And then I would go, I think I would stack it too. I think you have to include Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. She's kind of the star of these new movies as a whole. And she's still got an upcoming movie without, you know, threat of leaving the franchise.
Yeah, Wonder Woman.
For now. Right.
So my idea when we start talking about this was to take the cast that we know that we like, The Flash, this entire idea revolves around Wonder Woman, as she is the most fleshed out and most successful entity within the DCU. And, you know, you take a team of the core group, and Jason Momoa's Aquaman's coming out in December. And if that is even half as good as Wonder Woman is, you have another hero who's now fleshed out that you can now take on adventures and use, and people can understand their motives because he did have his own film.
Correct. Yep. And like I said, you mix them with this, you mix that with this idea to explore more than what Marvel's already done.
Yep.
Keep in mind, this is something that, you know, I think that, and I hinted at this earlier in this episode, I think Marvel could go there in Avengers 4. They could go there. I don't know that they will. They could. But DC has a unique opportunity. I mean, one thing, I'm a Marvel stan, but one thing DC does better in the comics is their multiverse tends to be fleshed out much better.
Yeah.
And it's always been that way. I mean, the alternate versions of Batman, I mean, we just talked about Into the Spider-Verse. If they did it like a Batverse type thing, there's really cool versions of alternate versions of Batman that exist.
There are a lot of very cool alternate versions of a lot of DC characters, especially now with the U52 and then the second reboot with Michael Bendis.
Oh, yeah. And well, he's still coming up here with, I mean, his new, I think he's, his big story has been Superman.
Yeah, Brian Michael Bendis is over at DC now.
Right.
Writing stories. You know, and I would, you know, like, we don't have a Superman cast. So guess what? By the time you do, you throw him into one of the multiverses that our core team has to go visit and do stuff with.
Right.
I think you have a really good opportunity to utilize some folks on the small and large screen to give you a really fun film.
Yes. And that, and there it is, that word right there, fun. DC can pluck any character from any property they want, and they can even cast new ones. Another thing I was thinking of that would be kind of cool is there's been hints. I think they've been developing a script for Booster Gold. You know who would make a really cool Booster Gold? Chris Pratt.
Mm. I mean, I don't think his contract will allow for
it. Oh, no. He would never be able to do that, but he would make a really good version of Booster Gold.
So the only thing I've been thinking is what I've been reading. Dude seems a little earnest.
Yeah.
Booster Gold seems a little bit earnest. He's, he's not as serious as, say, Superman. But Clark can be a little earnest in terms of, you know, his whole thing, what he's going to do. Booster, he seems like he takes the idea of being a superhero very seriously.
He does. Well, his story is actually pretty interesting. He comes from the far future. I mean, he's from like year 3000 or something.
Right.
And he comes back into current times, and he expects to be just as popular now as he was then.
Right.
And that's where kind of his crazy personality comes from. He's this proud superhero who thinks that no matter what time he's going to be just as well known. And when he gets here and discovers that he's not, it's kind of an earth shatter. You know, that's when he becomes kind of the jokey type character that fans really like about him. Yeah. And he's usually with, you know, the jokey, other jokey type characters, Guy Gardner, Blue Beetle, Fire and Ice. You know, he's associated with that group of characters, who are fun in their own little way. They're very non-DC. Well, they're not very non, it's not gritty at all. It's very goofy and fun loving. And that would be another character you could center a movie around. Not center, I mean, again, basing it on whatever you cast, and he plucks characters from, you know, the DCU. He's like, oh, I need to go get Flash and Wonder Woman from here, and I need to go get Batman from here, and I need to go get Superman from here, and I need to go get, you know, somebody from, you know, whether it be, I mean, you could include anything. Lois and Clark, you can include Gotham, you can include anything. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of this idea. You pluck from anything you can get, since you own the rights to everything. Why not do something that'll blow fans' minds? I mean, imagine them walking up on a Batman and him turning around and being Kevin Conroy in costume. You know, I mean, for that matter, what about Mark Hamill playing a live action Joker? I mean, that would be kind of cool too. Yeah. I mean, that would be cool, man.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it'd be very fun. You know, you take that core team and maybe even use Cyborg. But, you know, I feel like he's a add-on, kind of an also-ran. He may do better with the Titans than he does in this new multiverse adventure we're exploring.
I think. What do you think about the new Titans? Well, you know, I think it's actually getting decent reviews. I don't know if it's getting great
reviews. It's getting good reviews. Everyone keeps saying it starts slow. But if you stick with it after the first couple of episodes, you get paid off with a really good, payoff when you watch all of it. So,
okay,
the sum is bigger and better than the parts.
Huh. Okay. So I will say this.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that the thing I'm actually looking forward to from that channel is the spinoff that's going to come from that. Doom Patrol.
Right.
Doom Patrol is actually an extremely interesting comic that DC did, and the one they're basing it on was also written by Grant Morrison, and it's kind of like DC's version of the X-Men, for lack of a better description. And it actually came out, like, there's a whole big conspiracy thing here. DC released Doom Patrol a few months before Marvel released X-Men. And the reason I bring this up is it was marketed as the strangest superheroes of all, and their leader was in a wheelchair.
That's dirty. That is dirty.
So, and this predated the X-Men. Now, based on publishing, though, there's no way that they could have copied it and gotten it in that time frame. Maybe. But there are people that think that Doom Patrol came out first and that the X-Men copied that. Now, like I said, if you look at the marketing around the same time when they both came out, it is very, very, very similar. And it seems like more than a coincidence. I think that it's been proven that it really was just a really, really close coincidence. Because it's easy for DC to go back and say that, since the X-Men's so big and nobody knows what a Doom Patrol is.
Yeah, well, particularly when you listen to Stan Lee talk about the fact that he wanted to create a demographic of superheroes who fit within the time frame and the troubling times in which he's watching.
Correct. Correct. And that's not what the Doom Patrol was.
Right.
And that they, like I said, the only things that were similar were the leader in a wheelchair, and they were being marketed as the same way that the X-Men were, the strangest superheroes of all time. I think that's what they were called, like the strangest heroes of the time or something similar.
It's weird though, man, because when you think about the political aspect behind the X-Men, which everyone has always talked about, no one shied away from that.
Right, right.
But who knows if that was ever actually primary to this entire story or whether it's just a part of the story. that be, you know, that sounds good a little bit later on. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, it's also easy to say that when, you know, and this is one of the reasons, keep in mind, X-Men wasn't a hit when it first came out. And I think a lot of that has, they marketed as these characters that were being mistreated because they were different, but they were all, it was just five white kids. And that's another, like, it's kind of a jarring thing to make, to try and, you know, mirror the civil rights in a comic book form and have it framed around, you know, four white kids. And I mean, the original X-Men are kind of boring. I mean,
never saying anything that I don't agree with. I keep going, keep preaching, brother.
But I guess what I'm saying is that idea didn't really take off until they introduced the team with characters from different countries. I mean, you had Colossus from Russia and Storm from Africa, Nightcrawler from Germany, Wolverine from Canada. Yeah. Now, and not only that, these characters look, you know, their costumes were better. They weren't all the same. They were just more colorful characters. They were better personalities. They were just more interesting than, you know, Beast. I mean, Beast wasn't even really Beast. He was just a human with big hands and feet. Angel just had wings, and Iceman looked like a walking Frosty. You know what I mean? They weren't terribly interesting characters. But I mean,
Warren Worthington didn't get really interesting until he became Archangel.
Right, right. Well, and they've never utilized Iceman the right way. So,
well, particularly when you figure out that he's an Omega level mutant at this point. He's on the same level with his powers as Professor X and Magneto.
Yes.
But Bobby is never portrayed that way.
Well, and they try to, when they do an Iceman story, it tends to be, it's not engaging because they've never delved. It's like when they do it, they're forcing it.
And yeah, like the one time I saw something about him where his powers kind of got off the leash, you know, he was a villain where he's creating little ice monsters all over the globe.
Oh, yeah. Well, but that's the kind of, I mean, I think they've established that he's so powerful. If he can like turn himself into a vapor and travel around that.
So he can travel at the speed of light or whatever by just turning into the vapor in the air and moving molecules and reforming. It's like you can't kill him at this point because he can reconstitute from vapor in the air.
Correct.
This new Iceman is dope. But what they boiled him down to, you know, in the early parts was just a dude who rode on an ice skateboard, and that was it.
Well, they never really, his growth wasn't as organic as a character like Kitty Pryde, for example. I mean, that's what makes her so interesting. She's grown from a kid who now is like leading the X-Men, you know what I mean? I mean, she's grown as a character, and we've grown with her. Whereas someone like Iceman, every time they get to the, I don't think anybody really knows what to do with them.
Right.
And, you know, and you can make arguments like that for other characters like Jubilee. I mean, I think that's more, she's a product of her time more so than an interesting character.
Yes. I think being in 90, her aesthetic is so 90s. It's difficult for anybody. And, you know, the gift and the curse is she was the least known character who was introduced in that cartoon.
Right.
So everybody, she's a time capsule.
She's a time. Exactly right. Well, she was the character that when you watch the show, you were learning about the X-Men through her eyes, and that's kind of how Kitty Pryde was introduced in the comics at the time. You were learning about these cool characters through her eyes and joining the team. It's a teenager getting to go, wow, here's a guy that can turn his skin to metal, and here's a guy that can pop metal claws out of his hands, and here's a demon guy with a tail who can teleport. And and you got this beautiful woman Storm who can, you know, who's super powerful, and this guy that shoots beams out of his eyes, and you know, these great characters that she was learning about, and say were we as the reader, and that's what makes them so interesting. So it's funny how we also, by the way, we went off on this X-Men tangent again, back to Marvel when talking about DC.
It's hard, man. It is difficult. You know, one of the things and this is probably just a little bit of my fault in terms of my Marvel bias. There are so many aspects of DC comic books that I just don't always enjoy.
Right there with you. I've
tried to really enjoy some of these books and found myself that I just don't. The recent Green Lantern books have been pretty cool. You know, they've diversified with a female Latina.
Oh, yeah.
And a Middle Eastern Green Lantern, but homie is like almost a damn terrorist. Like, they set him up as a terrorist. Even if he wasn't actually going to blow anything up, just that idea is pretty fucking problematic.
Right. But
that's what DC did. I thought that shit was tone deaf as fuck. I don't know. But, you know, the idea to fix DC, having some fleshed out characters, because you have a Flash film, you have an Aquaman film, you have a Wonder Woman film. If those are your fucking core people, right? Because you don't have a person who's going to play Batman yet because the Batfleck is gone, and you're not going to have Superman because Henry Cavill's leaving. All right. So why don't you just fuck around, take your core three who have movies of their own and have them have adventures sliding in and out of the multiverses. I think that's your shit right there.
I think that's a really good idea. I really do.
Here, I mean, Hollywood?
And by the way, hey, that Aquaman trailer looked dope, dude.
Aquaman looked great.
It looks really cool.
I like the idea of what Jason Momoa brings to Arthur Curry. I feel like he is a mixture between who Jason Momoa is, but also this newer Aquaman, this Aquaman who eats sushi. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That particular type of Aquaman. I like that a lot. So I think
I do as well. I was impressed with the last trailer. My initial reaction to Jason Momoa's Aquaman in Justice League was kind of meh. I think they're trying a little too hard to make him cool, and it's because we didn't get a flesh out. Had the movie come out first, then I think Justice League would have been more enjoyable because we know him.
Justice League should have happened 10 years from now, right? You know, or at least 5 years, where we get to see all these characters fleshed out and you get to introduce Darkseid. Darkseid should be Thanos.
Yes, absolutely. You know, absolutely right.
You know, he's equally, if not more powerful. His Omega beams are crazy. They can.
Now, I mean, we may get this with the New Gods movie that they're doing.
Right.
Which is actually kind of the one other thing that I'll say for this multiverse idea, I'm not mad at DC for doing these solo films if they establish a multiverse. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, Joaquin Phoenix playing Joker in that origin movie, I'm fine with it. And I'm even fine with Jared Leto coming back as Joker if they want to put him in another movie, if you establish the fact that there's multiple versions of each character.
Yeah. Then, they can then all you could live. Pluck,
you could do tales at any time of any character for anything and do them as much as you want. A New Gods movie? Fine. It doesn't matter if it's not connected to whoever Batman is, because it can exist in its own thing. That's the beauty of a multiverse, of an infinity verse, something that is, it doesn't matter. I mean, like I said, I mentioned Lois and Clark. If you really want to bring Dean Cain back as a lame version of Superman and he flies by or something, or, you know, I mean, it's that idea that if all of them exist in the same existence, you now have set yourself different than Marvel and cool, as cool as Marvel, but in a different way.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be the same thing. It, you know, if Batfleck changes into a new Batman actor, it doesn't matter because it's just another universe. It could be another universe with Gal Gadot playing Wonder Woman. It's both universes. That's kind of the unique thing they can take with this idea.
Yeah. Dress her up differently. Give her a little different attitude. It should work.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think this is a great starting point for the DCU. I don't want to give them too much more. Motherfuckers already getting ideas of Lifetime for free. Fuck them.
Yeah. Hey, if anybody's using this, they're going to go and pitch it. I'm like, damn, man. We got to time stamp this shit. October. This is October 9th because it's definitely too late. So it's October 9th, 2018.
Correct.
This is a great idea here.
Yeah. Yes, just pay us and we'll go away.
Right.
But yeah, man, I think that's pretty much it for right now. We're going to close this out. Episode 97. I appreciate my man Scott staying up late with me. I know you're get up early. You, the fans, we appreciate y'all. Get out the room. Podomatic, Wicked Radio Network, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the whole deal. Next time, hopefully we will have all seen Halloween and some of the other things. You know, hopefully we will have gotten a chance to catch a matinee of Venom. We have so much to talk about when it comes to Venom. Obviously, it's a Marvel thing, so you know how we're going to go when that comes. And whatever else. Ideally, we'll be able to get in two more shows before December when everything starts dropping again. So we can do kind of a big show. It'd be very cool if that 100th show could be a really big one near the end of the year. We get all the old guys back.
Oh, so, for like a 100th episode bash.
Yeah.
That would be good. I've got an idea for that too, for a revisit episode too, for 100.
Hey, we can't tell them. Can't tell them. Go.
No.
Hold it in. But yeah, I like that too. So, Scott, man, anything you want to say before we get out of here?
Not really. I'd say you could find me online, but you guys know the drill at this point.
You won't find them.
Not there.
But yeah, Scott, appreciate you, man. And fans, I appreciate y'all for sticking in here with us and listening to another show, Get Out the Room. We'll catch y'all next time.
Peace.